Hi there once again. Very good evening to you. I'm Jack Hopke with you. Let's start. KidSmart won a national award from Americans for the Arts back in 2010 in recognition of its innovative work integrating the arts into classroom curricula. Now, this year, the organization received a grant to train teachers in three New Orleans schools to practice just such melding. Zoe Sullivan observed one of these arts-integrated classes at Langston Hughes Academy Charter School in Gentilly.
My name is Amanisha Ferdinand. I'm the Arts Integration Instructional Coach with KidSmart.
Take out your plays from yesterday.
In this class, what you will hear is them taking their own personal knowledge, the information that we've given them, and them bringing those things together to really construct their own learning about what it means to be mayor, not just the name of him, but what's required of that job.
Start in neutral as a scholar at Langston Hughes. When I count down to zero, you should have transitioned from a scholar at Langston Hughes into your mayor. 3, 2, 1, 0. I see strong shoulders, I see nose, I see a chest. Oh, I see some attitude there. Oh, I see a little bit of thinking.
When we first started writing these plays, sometimes the children would say, "Governor, I need the money so that I can have a babysitter for my kids." Or, "Governor, I need the money so that my family can go have a playground." And I said, "Well, now you're a mayor, that's a leader in local government, you have to ask for funding for everyone in your community and not just think about yourself."
Get a feel for how with this mayor's personality. Is this a polite mayor?
My name is Echo Olander. I'm the executive director of KidSmart. We started looking at the things that impact over a long period of time, and that's teachers. So rather than sending our artists into the classroom to do wonderful work that's only about them doing the wonderful work, we're really building capacity of classroom teachers to do that same kind of wonderful work when the artists aren't in there.
In order for you to convince the governor to give you funding, you have to know who you are and know what you want.
We are in 10 schools this year, and we've just been awarded some funding to work with 3 of those schools to take them to an even deeper level.
My name is
Our professional development has teachers learning skill sets, and the coaching component of it follows the teacher into the classroom and supports the teacher as they try those new skills. We're doing it at a school called Arise Academy, which is down in the Bywater, a school called Martin Berman, which is in Algiers, and Langston Hughes Academy, which is in the Gentilly area right behind the fairgrounds.
Excuse me, we need more houses because more people are moving in our country.
I think I hear that a lot. Oh, when are you coming back to our class? Or when are we going to have, are we having social studies today? Yay! Like, they say that. And I love it. And it makes me so excited to see children. That's what I think what we do is we make them love learning. They're identifying with what that academic subject is. And they're connecting a joy and excitement to learning that through the art form.
We need the money to get the art tool for the construction work.
For WWNO, I'm Zoe Sullivan.
And those were voices talking about the KidSmart program from an arts integrated class at Langston Hughes Academy Charter School in Gentilly. It's all things New Orleans. Here's something you like. You can hear it anytime. We archive all our features at WWNO.org. I'm Jack Hopke. The New Orleans Museum World has a new member. After being in town for only 4 months, the Ogden Museum of Southern Art's new director is working to unite the arts community with the city at large. We'll hear about William Pittman Andrews' guiding philosophies and disciplined routines on this week's Notes from New Orleans. That's next. On All Things New Orleans.
It's always nice when smart new people move to town. Even nicer when they can fit right in. No lifestyle explanations necessary.
It's not culture shock. And I've just come from Oxford, Mississippi, which we have a lot of New Orleans transplants there, bringing some of the wonderful things that we're used to in food and beverage and all things cultural. So it's not really a shock at all. It's a little bit of a scale change, but it's probably the largest city, small town I've ever been in.
That's William Pittman Andrews, the new director of the Ogden Museum of the South, formerly the director of the University of Mississippi Museum and Historic Houses. A through and through Southerner, he isn't surprised at the warmth and friendliness of his new home, nor has he found it difficult to adjust to the challenges of a larger city.
Well, the scale change right when I got here, I equated it in a social way to the size of New Orleans, that it is going from a 10-gallon fish tank to a 10,000-gallon aquarium. But it's a lovely change. It just means that there's more opportunities and more diversity and certainly more color, more background, and so many more things happening. But the people are very similar. You know, Southerners are always going to be neighbors. And that's something that I knew and counted on when I was moving here. I've met so many people with so many interesting stories. And one of the great joys of moving to a new place is that you get to hear all of these new people and their stories and understand what's important to them in the community. And you can glean a little bit of information on how you can help improve that community. Because when you move somewhere new, one of your greatest desires is to fit in and how you can contribute and work hard like everyone else to really do what I call is celebrating the good life. It's something that everybody enjoys, and we do it in New Orleans probably better and more consistently than anywhere else. And so it's a fun challenge to have.
A fervent believer in museums being community centerpieces, Andrews has definite goals for his institution.
Well, my philosophies and goals for the museum are constantly changing, and I'm always evaluating them, and they're based primarily on our visitors and what their reaction is to what we're doing. I'm happy to say that so many people profess their love for the museum and its mission and its wonderful objects and treasures frequently and openly to me. And that helps me guide some of our principles and what we're doing. There's a traditional model for a museum where it is like sacred space and hallowed ground, and you go and you have an experience and then you leave, and you leave a lot of that experience behind you. But what our attempt is here, and it makes so much sense in the South where community means everything, is that we're transforming the museum from a place where people go and look at things to a place where people go and do things together as a community, and to truly turn the Ogden Museum of Southern Art into a participatory museum, we need the participation and input of many people.
In addition to his Ogden managerial duties, William Andrews is himself a very serious visual artist. Fitting all the aspects of his life into each 24-hour day requires a very well-thought-out approach to time management.
Making art is something that I've always been interested in. I'm interested in all the arts, but visual art is something that I felt strongly attracted to. Like any other thing you set out to do, it's an important part of my routine. I keep a fairly steady studio practice. I would say that making, you know, drawings and paintings and sculpture for me is like someone that writes in a journal every day or maybe even reads the newspaper. Years ago, I fell into a regimen that I realized I would get the best of my energy and rest if I slept from maybe 9 or 10 at night to 1 o'clock in the morning. In my studio time, I have goals, you know, like anyone else. I want to be in the studio 15 or 20 hours a week, and I realized 10 years ago that I have optimal time between midnight and 6 in the morning. It's a very creative time as well. And I get an awful lot done so that when I get ready and take position in my office at the museum, I've already accomplished a tremendous amount in the day. I feel very good about what I'm going to do, and I have a clarity of vision that I don't think I would have if I just woke up in the morning and rolled out of bed and ran to the museum. So it's a practice that works for me very well.
For more information about William Andrews and his plans for the Ogden Museum of Southern Art, go to wwno.org or nolavie.com. For WWNO, I'm Sharon Lipman.
Also, information about the Ogden Museum of Southern Art is available as well online at ogdenmuseum.org. This is All Things New Orleans from 89.9 WWNO right here in New Orleans, where our local professional practitioners of America's great national pastime are a dynamic, and I mean that in many ways, bunch of guys based out on Airline Highway. About a month into the baseball season, I recently caught up with New Orleans Zephyrs GM Mike Schlein to talk about this year's club. Mr. Mike Schlein, we're very happy to welcome you to All Things New Orleans and WWNO Radio.
Hey, it's great to be on.
Mike, tell us a little bit about yourself. What brought you into sports management? What's your background?
I did an internship with the AAA affiliate of the Florida Marlins, which at the time, we're that now, the Miami Marlins, but at the time it was the Charlotte Knights back between my junior and senior year of college, and loved the business. And as soon as I graduated, I got in as another internship for single A Winston-Salem and moved to Charlotte for a few years, and then been in New Orleans for 11 with the Zephyrs, all the entire time working under the ownership of Don Beaver, who owns the Zephyrs as well as a couple teams in North Carolina. So I've been with the same company for my 15th season, just kind of worked my way up.
Tell us generally what functions you perform as GM of the Zephyrs.
I oversee the overall business operation of the team. It's a little deceiving as far as the title general manager. Obviously, at the major league level and in the NFL and NBA, the general manager is responsible for the player moves and personnel on the field. That's not the case at the minor leagues. That is handled by the general manager of the Miami Marlins, as well as his player development people that work in the minor league, you know, ranks. As far as general manager of the Zephyrs, it's overseeing the sales, the marketing, the finances, the promotions, and the things that make the business run.
And how are things going for the team?
We're having a good year. We got off to a good start. We've had a very good weather, which is one of the most important things. And the team's been winning, and the promotions have been fresh, exciting. So we're very pleased with the way the season's begun.
Do you find yourself at cross purposes in trying to, let's say, win your division and cultivate players to move up to the bigs?
Well, that's always what you want to do. You know, if you have a strong minor league system, it's going to trickle all the way down. It's going to start at the major league level, and the Marlins have a very, very strong team this year, which leaves us with a stronger team. But there's also some very talented guys behind the Zephyrs in Double A and all the way down to Single A. So if you have a strong minor league team, you're going to have guys that are going to be moving. Just as you're going to lose a great player from Triple A to the Marlins, you're going to be bringing up a player from Double A to the Zephyrs. So it's always going to be a revolving door. It's an impossible scenario to keep, you know, the same 25, 26 guys all season long. And trust me, there's a lot of years when, you know, the team that you have in April and May, you don't want to have that team in June and July. You want to have a better team. And when you have a good team in April and May, you're going to have to accept the fact that you're going to lose some of those guys. But at the end of the day, every team in the league is going through the exact same thing.
For those who are still somewhat unfamiliar with the Zephyrs, they are at the highest level of the quote-unquote minor leagues. They're a Triple-A ball club, and you're affiliated with the Miami Marlins, as we mentioned earlier. So the next step up for your guys, players that you're grooming, is the big leagues.
Absolutely, and we have a lot of guys on our team that have had big league experience.
Who are some of those folks, Mike?
Well, Brian Peterson, Scott Cousins is another. I mean, there's several on the team. So those are two of our main prospects.
Tell us a little bit, if you would, please, about the guys who run the team on the field on a day-to-day basis, about your manager and coaches.
Well, Ron Hassey is the field manager for the Zephyrs. He's played in the major leagues for several years with the Yankees, I believe Cleveland and Oakland. And he's just he's a great guy. I've gotten to know him over the last month and about a month and a half, and just a very, you know, calm presence but knows the game inside out, and, you know, seems to have a really unified clubhouse, and that's really what you need at this level. You know, guys are always going to want to be up in Miami, but you have to have them, you know, playing hard and ready to go out there every day and give it their all here in AAA, and I think he's got that. Our pitching coach is Charlie Corbell, and our hitting coach is Damon Miner. The pitching staff throughout the first 10, 15 games was unbelievable. I think their ERA was somewhere around 2, which is unheard of. Charlie just has those guys throwing outstanding, and the bats are starting to come around, and Damon's got these guys hitting the ball pretty well. So I think we have a very talented coaching staff. They're very cohesive, and they have a good team on the field.
It does sound as if when people come out to see the Zephyrs at Zephyr Stadium this year, that they're going to see some good baseball played.
Absolutely.
I don't want to sit here sounding like your PR guy, Mike, but I'm a baseball fan myself, and I enjoy going to that ballpark. That's a good facility.
It's a beautiful facility. It's fan-friendly. It's a beautiful playing surface. Our groundskeeper, Thomas Marks, does an outstanding job. I think it's affordable all the way from the tickets to the parking to the concessions. And I think when you come out here, you're going to have a good time, and you're going to be in a safe, family-oriented, fun environment.
We're talking with Mike Schlein, who's the GM of our baseball team here in New Orleans, our AAA Miami Marlins franchise, the New Orleans Zephyrs. Thanks for spending time with us today.
All right, thank you.
Katie Casey was baseball mad, had the fever and had it bad, just to root for the hometown crew every cent Katie spent. On a Saturday, her young beau called to see if she'd like to go to see a show, but Miss Kate said no. I'll tell you what you can do. Take me out to the ball game, take me out with the crowd, buy me some peanuts and cracker jack.
There's much more information about the Zephyrs, including schedules, scores, and promotions at zephyrsbaseball.com.
For it's 1, 2, 3 strikes, you're out at the old ball game.
This is All Things New Orleans. Each week on WWNO's Tell Me More, Michelle Martin hosts a group of gentlemen dubbed the Barbershop Guys for a roundtable discussion about current events. This week they discussed the NFL's decision to suspend several players for participating in the bounty system you've heard so much about. Martin speaks with freelance journalist Jim Israel, civil rights attorney Arsalan Iftikhar, columnist Mario Loyola, and former U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez.
I just had one more topic I wanted to run by you, gentlemen. The NFL investigation into that bounty system that where players paid other players for hard hits. It's resulted in the suspension of 4 players. Defensive captain Jonathan Vilma received the stiffest penalty. He's out for an entire year without pay. Now, that can be an eternity in the relatively short career of a professional football player. And I wanted to ask you guys if you think this was the right call. Arsalan, you're the Mads football fan here. What do you think?
Yeah, I think it was the right call, but I do think that it was disproportionate to the penalties given to the coaches. So Jonathan Vilma, who was alleged to have offered $10,000 for the taking out of Brett Favre or Kurt Warner during playoff games, which is a pretty big deal, suspended for the entire year. As we know, football players have a shorter, career lifespan. So that's essentially 10% of his, professional income. Scott Fujita, who now plays for another team, and 2 others, but Vilma was the strongest one. What's interesting is that, general manager of the New Orleans Saint, Mickey Loomis, and other members of management only got 6 or 8 games. We all know Sean Payton, the head coach, got a 1-year suspension, and Greg Williams, the former defensive coordinator of the Saints, is suspended indefinitely from football. It is a shot across the bow. I think it sends a resounding message to every team around the country that this sort of program, whether or not it's been going on for a long time, will have a zero tolerance policy moving forward.
Jimmy, what do you think?
I think it's kind of a joke. I think it's going to go on the low. That's why I think it's kind of a joke.
They thought it was going on the low. And
but they got caught. Yeah. But I don't think this is going to stop it. This is not going to stop the hard hits. This does not stop people putting bounty on other players' heads. I hope that it does, because my son has an interest in football. And I don't want him to think that that's the business. Oh, snap, Daddy, can I have $5 if I take that kid out? I don't want him thinking that's the business. By the same token, I doubt very seriously that this will stop the practice.
Judge, what do you think? You're a football fan, right?
I think we certainly don't want to stop the hard hitting. That is what makes football so attractive to many sports fans around the country. But I think this is going to send a very powerful message. I think it will be a disincentive and for people to engage in this kind of conduct. And I think when the sport is looking at injuries today and possible litigation down the road against the NFL, I think this is a smart business move by the NFL, quite frankly. So I support the decision.
Mario, what do you think? I know you're glad your beloved Green Bay Packers don't seem to have been implicated, but what do you think?
Well, I think when teams lack the finesse of the Green Bay Packers, they have to resort to methods of brute force.
Okay.
And so I'm not surprised at what other teams are doing.
Do you think that this is fair? Do you think that the punishment meets the crime, as it were? I'm sorry, I had to reach for a cliche. I apologize.
But I think that it's very unseemly to have this kind of thing going on. I mean, you know, the NFL should stand for sportsmanlike conduct. And, I mean, hard hitting doesn't mean that you have to violate the sort of basic ethic of sports, which is sportsmanlike conduct.
Judge, I have to ask you, though. The appeals process here is that you appeal to the person who made the decision, which is the commissioner of the NFL. Now, I understand that this is not, you know, but as a former judge yourself, I just have to ask, do you think that's fair? Don't you think there should be some outside entity?
Well, I suppose if I'm a player and I don't think it's fair, I guess I can go to court and seek some kind of relief. We haven't seen that happen. I haven't heard any talk that that's going to happen. But you know, the players know this going in. You know, they know this is the process, and they know what the rules are. They know what the consequences are, and they are suffering the consequences of their decisions.
So don't
see, now the military commissions are starting to look better, aren't they?
Oh, no. You did not go there.
Let's send everyone there.
All right. Arslan, what about you? I mean, as the civil rights guy here. Well, let's assume that everybody here believes in civil rights, I should say. But as a civil rights lawyer here, do you think that's fair?
I mean, it is due process, you know, within the confines of the NFL legal structure. So Roger Goodell issues a statement and issues a decision, and they want to appeal it. And Roger Goodell says, you know what? I really like my decision, and I'm going to uphold it. And, you know, Sean Payton and Greg Williams, the coaches, appealed also to Roger Goodell, which is the same system. It's not like there's a, you know, two-track system of NFL justice, so to speak. So everybody gets the same fair shake.
So all this legalese just really boils down to don't hate the player, hate the game.
Right.
Okay, good. All right, there we go. Exactly. There we go. Got it.
All right, Jimmy, I'm going to ask you to predict 5 years from now. Are we still going to be talking about this?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, okay. I assure you that we'll still. I mean, it's football. It's not Mahjong. Of course, we're still going to be talking about it. I mean, this is the game is about hard hits. You know, it's about we'd like it to be about sportsmanly conduct.
This isn't about hard hits. But it's about bounties.
And we'd like it to be about sportsmanly conduct. But it just, you know, like I said, this is the real world.
And I think, you know, the talk about hard hits and things like that, I think in 5 years, I think the discussion is going to shift more towards former players and the effects that, you know, a lifelong, you know, Dave Duerson, former, you know, safety of the Chicago Bears, took his own life a few months ago and told his wife to, you know, donate his brain to science to, you know, to study the impacts of this. Obviously, we're learning about the untimely passing of former San Diego Chargers linebacker Jr. So I think, you know, looking at retired players and seeing what sort of long-term impacts and, you know, sort of mechanisms we have in place for them moving forward, I think is going to be the discussion in 5 years.
That was Tell Me More's Michelle Martin speaking with the Barbershop Guys. Tell Me More is heard Mondays through Thursdays on WWNO2 at 8 p.m. And as we near 7 p.m. in fresh air, that'll do it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. Jack Hopke here each week to bring you our feature producer's works and working with executive producer Paul Mawson and the first sergeant of the operation, Mr. Thomas Walsh. Hear our items anytime at WWNO.org and send comments and suggestions to info@WWNO.org. We thank you for listening and we certainly hope to see you next Thursday.